probably about an inch and a half. And then as it slips off the cam, then the spring pressure takes over, pushing this bolt point straight down. So that now it hits the surface of Mars. Let me drop it. The electric motor keeps going. The electric motor is turning. It's pushing on this cam again. The cam is being pushed back up against these springs. And then, again, as it's released, the spring pressure pushes on this this thing and forces its way further into the surface. Now, this is going to go on and on. Like they said, it could take months, you know, before it gets down to the level that they want. But every time it goes down a foot or two, they're going to be happy with it. If it hits a rock, let's say there's a, they set up to a 2-inch rock, it would actually hit it and just move itself a little bit to the side, and, it'll just keep on going. It'll be pulling this what looks like, let me drop a second. What looks like, it's got this tape and these wires that are attached to the tape going down with it, but on its way down, every now and then, you know, every couple of feet, they have these detectors on this tape, and also a way to transmit heat through this hole. So now, picture this hole 15 feet to the ground, and then they're going to send eventually heat, not much of it, but enough to heat up the walls of this hole. And by the amount of time it takes to get released from the walls of this hole, that's going to tell them information. That's going to tell the scientists how much, how fast the heat is given up. Do you know what I'm saying about this device that's going to be hammering its way in? Can you picture that? Did I describe that? KD2, what is it? PBS, WS2. KWS2N, KD2,
PBS. You explained it perfectly. What a great, what a system. Unbelievable. Efficiency-wise, there's probably nothing better than the mind from the world that can come up with. So I'm going to keep listening to you. Very, very informative. I can't wait till 3 o'clock tomorrow. So, and also, keep up the good work. Katie, keep you up on the side listening. Thanks.
Yeah, one of the websites that Paul told us that the seven-story high screen on the NASDAQ building in Times Square is going to have a movie starting at 3 o'clock. Telling you the up-to-date information. Now, this probe that rams itself into the ground, does the cam raise a weight and the weight gets dropped like a hammer and it moves a 64th of an inch on each hammering? You talked about a spring. A hammer being dropped by gravity or by way of a spring hitting the back end of a probe, I can see how that's going to ram itself into the ground. But you didn't mention the word weight. You only talked about a cam and a spring. So I couldn't quite picture how this thing rams itself into the ground. Over to you, Paul, K2LIW.
Yeah, well, it's actually got two springs. They show a video on it. You just watch the news conference. And yeah, it's a combination. They have a spring above it and below it. The spring below it tends to keep everything in line a little bit. The one on top is a real precious spring, and that pushes this, let's call it piston down. I guess that would be the right word for it. The hammer device there. That keeps hitting this probe down. But this whole contraption will follow it down. You know, it's going to be one setup. And then this ribbon cable that comes out behind it will follow this whole contraption, motor and all, into the ground. And this ribbon cable is supplying the electricity to the motor. Ribbon cable supplying some kind of heating element that's going to heat up the hole. And it's also got the wires going back to insight to also, you know, give the information about what it's doing. So a little bit of everything on this ribbon cable. The ribbon cable comes out into this triangular canister. So it's not coming off of a reel, so you don't have to worry about a reel being hung up. So inside this canister, you know, it comes up and it's folded, you know, up, down, all the way down, you know, to the back of the canister. And then from there, it's just draped along the surface of Mars over to InSight. And that's where, you know, once it gets on InSight, it goes to the computers and transmits.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
The Odyssey is going to be receiving a lot of the information, you know, science information, and transmitting back for us on X-Band.
Paul, if you and I were building a probe that was going to have a tip that goes 15 feet into the ground, we'd start off with a rod 15 or 16 feet long and start hammering on it. I know that they don't have that. So the rod that's going to go into the ground, the probe, from top to bottom, how long is it? If it's, say, for instance, 5 feet long or 3 feet long and it's going to go 15 feet into the ground, then the top 10 or so feet is only going to be the ribbon coming out of the ground, going back to the inside the rest of the spacecraft. Over to you, Paul. K2RIW.
Yeah, no, this whole setup doesn't look like it's, it doesn't look like it's longer than a foot, maybe 14 inches. So, it's pretty compact. So, well, like anything else, you know, on a space mission. So, yeah, if I had a drill point, I shouldn't use the word drill, it's nothing spinning. If I had a bolt point chisel on my hand, and I had my hand, and my other hand had the hammer in it, and I was hammering this thing into the ground, I'd have to imagine disconnecting both my arms, but yet I'm still swinging this thing back up and down. My left hand and holding the chisel in my right hand with the hammer on it was supposed to be going into the ground, and the only thing that's coming behind me is ribbon cable following me into the hole. So instead of my hammer and my hand on my right arm, I've got this motor, you know, turning this cam, pushing this weight in the upright position, and then slipping off the cam, and then this pressure is going to push real hard against the distance. It's going to slam into this drill point thing, and it's going to keep going into the surface. If you ever see, the way the electricians run wires, for instance, they want to run a wire under a walkway, they have these self-drilling things, you know, they'll put it under the ground and, you know, in a horizontal position. They've, you know, power it up and off it goes. I mean, there's nobody on the outside hitting it. It's pounding its way, you know, it'll go right under a driveway, pop out the other side, no problem. And then now they have a hole underneath that, and then they can run their conduits or whatever they're doing. It's that type of thing, except miniature.
The inside probe is how many inches in diameter? And I think you said it's roughly 14 inches tip to bow to stern. Is the whole length the same diameter? And what is that diameter of hole? Go ahead.
Are you talking about the inside landing out of whole setup?
The thing that's going to go 15 feet in the ground. You said it was 14 inches long from tip to from stem to stern. How big in diameter is that? And is the whole 14-inch length the same diameter? Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, this gadget that it's going to put, that they're going to put the whole gadget onto the surface with the robotic arm is, I'm guessing, about 14 inches. You know, I'm just looking at it every time they show a picture of it. I really don't know the exact number. And the diameter of this thing, I don't know. My guess is probably an inch and a half, no more than that. Maybe an inch and a quarter. I can't imagine being any. That's probably the widest diameter. In fact,
So the motor, the cam, and the weight is all contained on the top, and that is also 1.25 inches in diameter. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, they have it all. Smashed into this one cylinder. In fact, I can't even see the motor when it's operating. I can see the gear turning, or the piece that's moving, that's pushing against the gear. So there's a motor probably, my guess, at the top of it, somewhere up. But, it's pretty involved. And then, I would imagine, those things that'll be working day after day, night after night. I guess, as long as they have power for this thing. They said that, maybe within a couple of months they'll have, start getting ready for science in a couple of months. They're going to do pictures, 360-degree pictures when they land. First thing they're going to do is put the seismometer onto the ground, and then they're going to put the cover on top of the seismometer. This might take a month just to do what I just said. Then they're going to put the heat probe contraption that's going to fill itself or bang itself into the surface. Take that off the lander and place that on the ground. And one of the interesting things, one of the questions that somebody asked was, is the seismometer going to be used to also hear the banging of the heat probe going in? And they are going to do that. They plan on getting information from their own probe. They weren't thinking about it originally, but then they thought about it, and they said, we can use that. So that is the main deal. It does have 24-hour weather information on board that's going to be given. Instead of intermittently, it's going to be given,
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
A couple of other things on board.
I'm guessing that seismometer probe had to have an absolutely perfect vacuum inside of it, because any air molecules in there running around because they're at some particular temperature would be striking the sensing device and creating false alarm signals, as opposed to the super sensitivity that they really want out of that. That's why they had to delay another 2 years in order to fix that vacuum device. Paul, go ahead. And by the way, whenever I sink a earth screw anchor into the ground for my guying of my tower, the first time I take this Archimedes screw and start screwing in the ground, I almost always strike a rock. And I pour water in the hole and back it out and push it back in at a slightly different angle to get around the rock. So if this probe is hammering itself into the Mars soil and hits a rock, there's no way it can back itself out or aim itself at some other angle. So I think that's something to worry about. If it runs into a rock, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW.
Yeah, if it hits a big rock and it's near the edge, it'll turn a little spot going on the side a little bit. They expect that would happen. If it comes down and hits this big rock straight on, the question was asked, if it's a rock around 2 inches in diameter, it'll go around it, no problem. And what they did is they did testing from one of the satellites in orbit months ago, and that's why they determined that this location that they're landing in is the best. Satellites in orbit use ultraviolet, some kind of ultraviolet type of camera, whatever. They investigated the surface from the satellite, and whatever information they got back, they knew if it was, one way or the other, the reading that they got back, to tell it if it was going to be a hard surface or a soft surface. They could tell the harder surfaces or the softer surfaces on Mars with whatever the detectors they have on these satellites. So that gave them a good location. So that was number one. Number two, they look miles all the way around. It's a massive, you know, looks like a flat field. There's no rocks. I mean, very little of anything on the surface of the tropics. Being a geologist, but listening to one at the news conference, this guy said if there's no rocks on the surface for miles around, chances are there's no rocks under the surface. For a depth of 15 feet, they're like 99% confident that this thing is going to hammer itself into the ground. You know, I mean, I have the same questions, but apparently other people have the same questions, and they ask those questions at the news conference, and this guy answered it.
Sounds good. So what's going into the ground in this probe with this ribbon cable behind it is probably a heating element, a heat sensor, and a seismometer. So any Mars quakes will be detected, and the thermal characteristics of the soil will be detected. That's what I think is going on here, Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, Paul. I didn't follow the science that much, but the idea is not to see how much heat is coming out of the surface of Mars as they go down 50 feet, but they're actually going to inject heat into this hole. And by measuring the time it takes for the hole to give up the heat that they put in, that's going to tell them something about whatever they need to know. So, and another thing that they brought up was this seismometer. They showed the typical seismometer that they would put in a different location on Earth, and it looked kind of like the other one, except a lot bigger. They said that they would bring it out to a location somewhere on the planet, and they would put it in a hole and put concrete around it and also sort of styrofoam, make sure that things are going to move or vibrate, and that's how they would utilize the detectors. It's just that the one going to Mars is much more sensitive, and they don't have a crew on Mars to dig a hole and put concrete down and put styrofoam around to detect anything. The way they get around that is by placing it onto the surface and then putting this cover roller. The cover has this heavy chain type of stuff on the bottom, which is going to create a pretty tight seal on the surface itself, so that if any wind comes by, it won't get underneath them and drop. And it also has a thermal capability. Not only this cover, but the sphere itself that has this high vacuum on the inside. It's a double sphere, and there's another vacuum inside it, inside of this other casement. So it's a sphere inside of a sphere type of deal, inside of a cover that's going to, you know, be put on top of the robotic arm from Mars. So that's the story on this thing. 2 o'clock tomorrow, they'll start coverage, and that'll be it. We'll find out if they had a success. They'll be transmitting live from Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, the same place that you saw 6 years ago when they landed Curiosity successfully on a planet, and everybody cheered. Now you can see that in many documentaries. All those chairs will be occupied by the same people again, and hopefully it works out. Just want to go over a couple of other items. We'll get to any later, Dick. Yeah, further question on Insight.
When it comes to us finding a good website where we can watch this action, if we just go to nasa.gov and then I guess the word Insight will lead us to the right place. Is that the website that you're going to be going to watch the streaming of this data? Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, well, if you never did it before, you go to nasa.gov, and there'll be a link to TV to see it live. And if you have a tablet or a phone, they have a NASA app. I recommend doing that now, so unless you're really good at downloading apps, I'm not. And then I have that on my tablet. have it on my Chromebook. I have a NASA TV for that. Now, the newest thing is if you have any kind of streaming device set up on your television set, which a lot of people have now, you could also download the NASA app. I've done that, and I have, you know, they call it Roku, R-O-K-O, or Roku, for streaming stuff. So, you download the NASA app for that, go to NASA and click on the NASA TV thing, and boom, now you have it on my big screen TV. That's probably what I'll definitely do that tomorrow. That's how I do it, Dick. Back.
Based on past experience, would our regular television, ABC, CBS, NBC, are any of those stations claiming that they're going to be covering any portion of this uphole? Go ahead.
I haven't heard that one way or another, but my guess is they probably will. You know, I think it's a big thing. But unfortunately, they're not going to give you the detail. You remember the 60s, you know, it was on 24 hours a day. You put on, you know, NBC, no problem, ABC. All the stations carried the space stories. But, so I can't guarantee that, you know. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, nothing's happening unless there's some crazy political breaking news. My guess is some of the stations will carry it. Will they break into their soap opera stories to put a Mars landing on? I don't know. I hope so. If worse comes to worse, you'll be able to put it on the news. I'm sure every news station will probably carry that.
The inside probe has a thermal sensor on it, maybe near the tip or maybe along the side. And a source of heat above that will be poured into the hole. Is that source of heat going to come out of that hemispherical thing that's shielding the top of the hole? Is that going to be the source of heat that gets time constant measured down to the probe? Over to you, Paul.
I haven't figured that out yet. They said they were going to do it every couple of feet. So maybe there's a gadget near the top of that. And then one article I read, I don't know if that was right, where they said they have to go all the way down. They were going to check the different levels. I think they're going to check the different levels as they go down. But that's my guess. We'll have to wait and find out. Just a couple of other topics. Let me see if anybody has any other questions about InSight first. Okay, this won't take long. Talk about Mars. Elon Musk from SpaceX, he's been developing a rocket bigger than the Falcon 9 that he uses nowadays, which he's launched, you know, successfully for 50 or more flights. The next rocket under development is the one that eventually he would like to take to Mars. He'll probably go to the moon first. Plans on developing this within a couple of years. Developing it now, but they came up with a name for it. They gave it so many different names. They're officially going to call it the Starship. Basically, that's it, the Starship. And the launch vehicle or the launch booster that they're going to use will be called the Super Heavy. So, finally gave this thing a name. I like the older names, you know, when this was years ago when he was starting to think about or develop the rocket that he was going to take to Mars and the rocket engine when we drop it. The original name I liked was called the Mars Colonial Transport. That's MCT. Mars Colonial Transport. I think he should have stuck with that one. He wants to use it for other missions. He wants to use it sometimes without people and maybe send, you know, probes to the different planets. So you can finally get away from just the Mars name. But I like that. And they changed it to ITS. And that stood for Interplanetary Transport System. Okay, not bad, you know. So, I got that. Maybe you should have stuck to that. Then he switched over to BFR, which sounded terrible because didn't like the words that came out of BFR, but he called it the Big Falcon Rocket. Didn't like that name. I don't think that's really the way to go because of the initials BFR. Now he finally changed that again. Let me drop it to the word Starship. So we'll go with Starship. And the launch vehicle will be the Super Heavy. I mean, he's got plans on like eventually putting 40 people at a time and sending him to Mars and go for the goal. And I think if he's young enough, he plans on doing it himself. But that's Elon Musk with his SpaceX. He comes out with his stuff. It's under development. Eventually, he's making actually a smaller version of the Starship, and he wants to attach it to Falcon 9 rocket just to test the ability in orbit, you know, test all the rockets, all the attitude control rockets and all of that. And he plans on eventually doing that. That's all under development. He's working on the big engines. He's eventually going to have like 33 engines firing at once to put the thing into orbit. And each engine now that he uses is called a Merlin engine. And the new engines are going to be called Raptor engines, and which is going to have like two or three times the thrust of each Merlin engine that he uses on the Falcon 9. Let me drop it. So that's the story on that. I'm going to talk about the Mars 2020. 2 years from now, Mars 2020 will be launched. Looking forward to that because that's going to be a rover, about the same size of Curiosity, a little heavier than Curiosity, but you know, a rover that's going to be more well-equipped. Going to have better cameras, better laser beams that shoot the rocket. They're able to test things than what we have today. It's also going to be bringing a helicopter with it on the bottom of the vehicle after land. They're going to have a helicopter, and they plan on flying half a dozen missions with this thing. Big 2-foot-long blades. They've tested it in a big chamber with a similar atmosphere to Mars. It works. So that should be interesting. It also has a core drilling bit on board. Curiosity has a regular bit that it could drill into a rock, and they get the powder, and they put the powder into a chemistry lab on board the Curiosity. This one's going to have a core boring machine. And they plan on getting these like 3/4-inch diameter cores out of the surface or out of a rock. And they plan on leaving them on the surface as they go. And they're just going to leave them there. And then years from now, they plan on sending a sample return mission. It's going to land very close to where this 2020 rover will eventually land 2 years from now. And it's going to drive around and it's going to pick up these samples and bring them back to the vehicle that it landed in and eventually take off and somehow bring them back to Earth. That's their long-term goal to have. This is like, for the sample return people, this is like step one. The most important thing about it, the reason I bring up the Mars 2020 rover now is they finally decided on a location on Mars where to land, a place called Jezero Crater. Jezero Crater stands about 28 miles in diameter. And they plan on landing in this thing. It's got all these diversified rocks, different kinds of rocks that they know that's there from taking pictures above. They want to get one of each. I think they said there's at least 5 different types of rocks in this one big crater. And it's much more difficult to land there. Mars Curiosity rover, had a certain footprint that it had to land at. It was 150 miles or something. This one's going to be less than half of that for accuracy. if they miss, there's cliffs on one side, and then on the other side there's other problems, some big rocks, and then somewhere in the middle there's essentially a sand desert that they don't want to hit because the wheels would get stuck. But they have this terrain relative navigation system, which looks down at the surface, could look at all the different rocks, look to see where it is. If there's any dangerous thing in the area, it's going to direct the sky crane, which has rockets on it, as it's coming down, to go left, right, or in between. So they have this terrain relative navigation system on board, which no other lander has ever had. And that's the story. I don't want to hold it any longer in case anybody else has any questions. This is WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet.
The 2020 rover is going to drill down and create a core sample. But the drilling that it does, will the 2020 rover use any of that drilling immediately, or is it just going to set up these core samples and set them on the ground and say, okay, some years in the future they're going to be picked up? So is any use going to be made immediately of the core samples that the 2020 rover creates? Over to you, Paul.
Probably, they'll probably put it on board, take pictures of it, or maybe put it through some kind of analytic device like they have on board. They have the CAM, or the chemistry on Mars unit on Curiosity. Probably have similar things. I would imagine they'll analyze it to some degree. But for some reason, the scientists want to get these things back. But especially the geologists, people that are really into this, they could do a lot more on Earth. In fact, in the news conference, they said they could have a person walking around on Mars. They could do a lot more investigating than what takes a robot, maybe a month to do. Humans make a decision up to 5 minutes. So I guess if they get the samples back to Earth, they'll be very happy. But don't hold your breath. There's not even a mission that's planned to do this. They're just hoping against hope that they're going to get the funding to do something like that. Back to you.
The degree of difficulty of going there, navigating around, finding this sample on the ground, picking it up, and returning it to Earth. That whole process strikes me so darn difficult. I'll bet you if they do a thorough enough study, they'll find out no matter how elaborate a chemical laboratory is required, so to speak, or geological laboratory is required to analyze something, I think they'd be better off sending a miniaturized version of that laboratory there, Paul. Over to you, K2RIW.
Yeah, I agree, but apparently you're able to take these core samples and then they take slivers of them, Can't imagine doing that, but I guess that's what they do, and then they analyze it. I don't know. That's up to the scientists, how they do that. They have these high-powered diamond drills or something, or diamond blades that cut through the stuff. Can't do that with the kind of power that you have on the Mars 2020, or dealing with, I think, 400 watts per hour, and a lot of that has to go to driving around and surviving at night when the heat is on. You don't have the kind of power to run some kind of store to make these slivers and analyze things. That's my guess. Back to you.
I think you said the 2020 lander is slightly heavier than the Curiosity lander. Is it also going to be landing by way of a sky crane, but a slightly more sturdy sky crane to accommodate the extra weight? Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, I heard it was about the same size, but a little heavier. So, I guess they must know they have enough resources to, inside that sky crane to be able to do what they got to do. Well, maybe they are. Maybe it's at a lower level too, where That would help too. The lower it is, the more time they have to slow down with the parachute. They also have a bigger parachute, so I think that's a part of it too. The parachute's definitely bigger. Curiosities. One other thing I wanted to quickly mention before I run out of time is eventually we're going to be sending people to the International Space Station, and the first vehicle that will probably be doing that will be the Dragon crew vehicle from SpaceX. We do have a date now for the first crew vehicle to go up without the crew. The first mission is going to be a test mission. Make sure this thing gets up to the International Space Station, docks with the International Space Station, separates and comes back and lands properly in the Pacific Ocean when we go. And that unmanned test vehicle is the first crew vehicle. I mean, if you put a crew inside, it's going to have everything that they need. They won't have that crew, but it will fly up to the International Space Station, dock with it, they'll open it up. You know, when I say they, the people on board the space station, they'll take a few supplies out, whatever it is, run some tests, then they're going to deorbit from the space station and land in the Pacific Ocean, and everything's going to be done all autonomously. When it comes up to that International Space Station, there's no more robotic arm. It's just going to dock and then eventually undock by itself. So that's pretty cool. That will happen January 7th. It will be a night launch. So one of these middle of the night deals, you have to be up to, I'll be up to watch and see if this thing gets off Launch Complex 39A safely and up to the space station. Back to you, Dick.
I'm a little curious as to why it's landing in the Pacific Ocean instead of having wings on it and landing on land. And I guess it's not one of these deals where, like the other boosters that back themselves down and land themselves as reusable. Is this craft reusable? And the thing that actually hits the ocean, is it a slightly larger version of the Apollo command module? A bell-shaped object? Go ahead.
The vehicle itself is the same size as the cargo version that's going up to the space station now. So it's the same size. That's the deal with that. The only difference is that service module, which is about the equivalent size of the spacecraft itself. So, yeah, that's the deal. So it's coming back and with a heat shield and landing just the same way that the Dragon cargo vehicles land. Come down on a parachute, land in the Pacific Ocean. SpaceX has their own boat out there. They'll pick it up and bring it back. And that's what they're going to do with the crew after as well. Now, not to be outdone, Boeing has the Starliner flight, and that will be going up a couple of months after SpaceX. They're going to run a test flight, the same type of deal. They're going to launch from an Atlas V, Launch Complex 41 from Florida. It's going to dock with the International Space Station as well, without a crew. And the Starliner will come back and talk about land on land. This will land on land. It's got a big heat shield parachute. These big airbags are going to pop up on the bottom of the spacecraft, and that's how they're going to land. And then soon after that, the first crew that will be going up will probably be with the Dragon. Let me drop it. That will be in June, and then eventually, soon after that, you're going to send the first crew up in the Starliner, Boeing Starliner, a couple months after that. That's the present plan, unless things get delayed. But they're getting ready to go. Both launch complexes already have their crew arm attached to the launch towers, which will swing out, attached to the spacecraft, will be able to put the crew on board. Both companies, Boeing and SpaceX, have that all done. They're getting there. We've been talking about it for years. Delays for years. But they're getting to the point where they're all going to eventually do what they said they were going to do. The is WS2M, back to you, Dick.
What's the maximum number of human beings that either of these vehicles are capable of carrying, both up and coming back down? Over to you, Paul.
Seven, but you're going to see four. That's usually what it's going to be. In the beginning, it's going to be, of course, two on Dragon and three on Boeing Starliner. And eventually, as the years go by, by the way, you're going to eventually see Dream Chaser as a cargo vehicle going up, and that will be landing on a runway, just like the shuttle did. But that's a few years away. They have a contract. It's not going to go away. They have a six-delivery cargo contract with NASA. So eventually, when I say they, it's Sierra Nevada Corporation. They're the ones developing Dream Chaser. That's going to be launched again on top of an Atlas V rocket by the United Launch Alliance from Launch Complex 41 in Florida. It'll dock with the space station. They'll unload the cargo, and eventually that will come back autonomously and land on the runway. Well, there's development for this exact same vehicle to carry a crew, and that will eventually carry a crew of seven as well. All of them, the total amount of people is seven. Starliner, Dream Chaser, and Dragon. Back to you, Dick.
You said Atlas V as the booster. That's a familiar sounding name from the Apollo mission. Are they resurrecting that booster, or they building a brand new one and just happen to be giving it the same name? What's going on there, Paul?
You're thinking of the original Atlas that launched John Glenn and eventually Cooper, and, you know, all the way up to Cooper, you know, you launched Carpenter and Shepard. And, yeah, they launched all the Mercury vehicles. And then Atlas developed over the years. You know, wound up with the Atlas II and the Atlas III, and eventually we got the Atlas V, and then the last, I think, 100 flights? I think 100 flights of Atlas V have been successful. To give you an idea, Curiosity, the one landing on that landed on Mars 6 years ago, August, was launched by an Atlas V rocket. So, yeah, I mean, these things have been going up for years. Probably, in fact, it's 100% success rate on the Atlas V. Back to you.
Okay, then what was the name of the booster that was used on Apollo?
Yeah, that would be the Saturn V. You're thinking of, okay, that's what you, I see what you did there. But so, yeah, Saturn V was Apollo. Titan II was the Gemini flights, and then you had two different boosters for Mercury. All the Atlas ones were for the orbital missions for Mercury, and you had the Redstone. The Redstone was for the first two manned missions that were not powerful, so they wound up suborbital. They went into space, and that was Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, we've come to the end of our time. 73, you all. We'll be back next week with. Let's hope everything goes smoothly tomorrow at around 3 p.m. Turn it over to Roy if he wants to say any final words. And thank you for all that information, both Roy and Paul. AC2GS for any final. K2RIW clear, but listening to you guys.
Thank you very much, Dick. Thank you, Paul. That was a good space report. And next week we'll do it all over again. Once again, if you need to contact me, any topics, questions, answers, denials, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you're interested in any of the stories, the links have been posted on roy.ac2gs.com. And maybe I'll whip up a little discussion of autism for Rich, who's interested in the subject, next week. We'll see. Thanks, everyone, for participating. This is AC2GS. Going clear.
Very good. That's very good reports as well, Roy. And anybody that wants to watch this docudrama, I guess you could call it, it's called Mars, and I think they're up to their third season. And that's on National Geographic on my system, is Channel 162. two on Cablevision. But I think they're up to that third show already. But, you know, it's pretty good, especially if you've seen the first two seasons. This is the third season with Mars. It's called just Mars, you know. And they have some interviews with real people on some of the shows I've seen, Elon Musk and all of that. But try that. Good time. 73, guys. Have a good week, and we'll be back next week to try to figure out if Insight did good or bad. Back to you, Dick.
Hey, 2RIW, K6GPZ. Dick, are you in there? Hey, 2RIW, K6GPZ. Hey, 2RIW, K6GPZ. Dick, you're afraid your hands are going to get slapped. Why don't we go over to 205-850. 46850. I'll talk to you there. K6DPZ QSY. Yeah, Dick. 146805. I'm sorry. 146805. Same PL.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. W2VL repeater system. at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Tonight at 8:30, W2VL repeater system.
I was being extremely sarcastic. what did this individual do?
Hey, listen, let me put my hands on the wheels. I'm on the expressway here in this traffic, believe it or not. Hey, buddy, listen, I guess you're on your way back. We'll see you when you're back in the neighborhood.
No, not back till the end of the week. Coming back Saturday.
Okay, Jeff. Like I said, I'm going to have to sign. Again, traffic is getting a little hairy because it is Monday and everybody's on the road. Hey, listen, we'll see you Saturday, Sunday. You have a good one, buddy. KD2AMZ, I will be clear, but I will be listening. Keep shouting. I'm sure there's people out there, Jeff.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I'm kind of listening on New York Metro, DMR. So, yeah. I'll catch you later, Mikey. Have a good one. And to Iowan.
KD2AMZ, 73.
Iowan, 72 Zodiac. You're on vacation. What are you doing up so early?
At 8:30, welcome to the W2VL repeater. At 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
This is KD2QMS listening.
Thank you.